Yes, when Jean got out of the Coast Guard in 1953, we moved to Louisville because we were looking for a place not right near our Wisconsin hometowns, but close enough that we could go there to visit on vacations and things. And we wound up in Louisville because Jean had been stationed on the Ohio River with the Coast Guard, and he remembered that it was a really cool city and they had a great basketball team. He was a great sports lover. After we moved here, I discovered that he had never been up above the bars on Main Street. He really didn't know anything about Louisville, but it turned out to be a good city for us. He wanted to go to college, he wanted to start college, and went out and was admitted to the University of Louisville. So he was a full-time student. I was working and I was taking some night classes. So that I already had 2 years of college and I wanted to finish my degree, so I was just taking one or two classes at night. And that was how came to see this Unitarian notice. And I think we even invited some of that group over to our apartment and for a supper one time. And I said, this is a long time ago. We're talking, what, 70, 60 years ago, and my memories are pretty vague of what we did when, but I have some very sharp memories of going into that beautiful old church and hearing Bob Weston talk, and then nothing else for a while. That would have been sometime in the mid to late 1950s. So that after Jean graduated in 1957, then I went back full-time to get my degree from U of L, and he was already teaching in New Albany, and then I got a teaching job in New Albany right after I graduated. And then we moved over here. So during those years, he was in school and then I was we lived in an apartment on Dixie Highway, and I'd been raised Methodist, so we were married at Highland Methodist Church, by the way. We started going to Methodist Church out there in Chadley, and somewhere along there, the minister, that was when they began integration, and the minister stood up there on Sunday morning, just after we were very comfortable with that church and beginning to be active in some committees and things. The minister stood up and said that we know that there is going to be segregation, but there is not our integration, but there is not going to be integration at this church. And we basically got up and walked out. And of course we were immigrants from the north, so we weren't in tune with that idea at all. And so after that, for some years, we didn't go to church at all. And we said the great outdoors and the beautiful warm bed at home, that was our church. But something along the line piqued our interest. We knew about Unitarians, and every once in a while there would be an ad, or there were. It was money then to have ads in the paper and tell what the sermon was going to be and so on. And or we would just cross paths with people we had known. And I think the point at which we really became involved was in 1963. I had been teaching for nearly 5 years and suddenly discovered that I was pregnant. We had thought I couldn't have children. Suddenly, in the fall of 1963, I was pregnant. And that seemed to ring some kind of bell. Okay, it's all right if we don't go to church, but if we have a child, we want to have some kind of base, religious base, and family base. We had no relatives whatsoever anywhere near this area. And so belonging to the church became much more important as being our family. So we got up one Sunday morning, Gene looked at the paper and whatever the sermon title was, he turned to me and said, oh, I don't know about you, but I'm going to go to church this morning. And after I picked myself up off the floor, we got dressed, went over, remember being warmly welcomed and greeted at the door by the self-appointed greeter, and I'm having a senior moment, I can't think of his name, we called him Ash. Was it Mr. Ashcroft? You will know, you can look this up. And he was just the best person to have meet at this beautiful big red front doors. And they must have been murdered, because I know I was very pleased with them. At that time, the church's orientation of the front was on First Street, not on the side. That happened after the fire. Again, I don't know what the sermon was about. I only know that I enjoyed it a lot. And what years, I have to find out what years Bob Weston was the minister. I don't know if he was still the minister at that point.
Well, here it says that Philip Smith was from 59 to 63.
Phil Smith in 1963. Okay, then whenever he left, we must have arrived just after David Brown. I have no recollection of Phil Smith as
minister. David Brown in 1963, yes.
Yeah, and so it was winter. It would have been early winter of 64. I thought Timothy was born in... But we had been going for some little time after that. For some reason, the Phil Smith thing just doesn't ring a bell.
It says that David Brown...
I really think this all was part of the church scandal. The minister and the RE director, I think, took off together. Anyway, David Brown was the first minister I clearly remember. We both just loved him and his family, and he was very instrumental in making us feel at home, feel welcome. I remember that after the very first service, Gene wanted to go up and sign the membership book. We both did. We said we feel like we've come home, and we didn't even know this place existed. But when was Kennedy assassinated? Turn that off. When was it? We had just started attending. There was going to be some kind of what sounded very interesting, very important Thanksgiving weekend service, and that was when Kennedy was assassinated. But I think I have such a sharp memory because of being very, very disappointed, because the sermon was all about the assassination of Kennedy rather than about the Unitarian things we were interested in. At that point, we were still Republicans, because we were good old Republicans. We weren't the nasty new Republicans that they have now. And in our part of Wisconsin, there wasn't a whole lot of sympathy for the Democratic cause. So the assassination of Kennedy didn't mean as much to me as whatever the topic was going to be. And that stands out in my mind. As the years went on, we learned better, and maybe the world learned better, and our opinions completely shifted. But we still had some problems with a few specific issues, which don't have anything to do with this. So we were going to the Couples Club, and to all the other related things, had become very, very involved, and looking forward to the birth of a child and being able to have I had probably attended one or another child dedications, had been so impressed by the way they welcomed the new babies into the world and into the church. I began attending the Women's Alliance. Somebody knitted us some little white booties, and it's all my family away from home. The church was much more than just a religious center to us. And what next?
Anything else about David Brown's ministry that you'd like to comment on?
No, I'm trying to think what year would have been my first General Assembly.
Oh.
the year that David Brown suddenly had a stroke and died, I was already doing the RE work because the RE director, it wasn't Phil Smith. That was entirely mixed up in my mind. I hope to go back and sort this all out, Doug. Yes, we're active in the church. We're sitting down here at Couples Club. We were entertaining Couples Clubs. We were already in this house. So Tiffany would have been a couple years old at that point, and I can picture a sofa there. So anyway, suddenly realized some undercurrents. We were so naive, we had no idea this was going on. It was the president of the church board and the RE director who had developed this relationship. And so he left and she left, and the education department of the church, which we weren't all that involved in yet, all we had was a very small child and not really into any of the Sunday school classes or anything, but the RE department decided that they didn't need to be to hire a new RE director, that the RE committee could handle the situation, and they would get people to teach the classes and someone to sort of manage the department or something. And after I don't know how many months of this, it just didn't work. And the attendance was falling, the kids were really acting up, and the boiling point came one Sunday morning when a couple of our junior high boys dropped the water balloon down onto York Street just as one of our church matriarchs was getting up the step. And that kind of made them realize, you know, we really do need an educator up here to run the department and try to get things back on track. So I thought about it. I had been a public school teacher. I knew all the ins and outs of education, and particularly enjoyed curriculum, things of that sort. And so I told them, I don't really know that much about Unitarian Universalism, but I can learn that, and in the meantime, it seems to be what you need here is an educator who can kind of bring things into shape up in the department. So they decided to hire me, but they wanted to hedge this very, very much. They had no idea whether it would work. They had no idea what was coming. And so they hired me as the religious education coordinator for 15 hours a week. And that's why I was preparing, I was doing getting materials together, doing curriculum, and just having meetings and teachers and assembling this. I was very fortunate. I don't remember having to do teacher recruiting myself. I had a husband who was excellent at making phone calls and recruiting. Right. Yep. And so, luckily, I had the best of all worlds involving that. So, not too long into this, not too many years, whenever it happened, I was getting ready to go to my very first General Assembly. David Brown was the minister, was the only other person going from Kentucky. I don't think anyone from Lexington was going that year. And I was very excited about going to GA. And then, of course, Thunderbolt David Brown died, had a stroke and died. So it came up to GA time. I was going to be the only Kentucky person there. And I felt, I made this up within myself, that it was really important for me to be there. And I had to bring back all I could possibly bring back about religious education. So that Denver GA was really, I think, a highlight of my entire work with the church and with religious education. came back to full of ideas and new curriculum and got them to give me a copy of something that was going to be published soon and to the, we could bring it home and test it. And it worked and kind of gave some of David's friends and colleagues, I got to meet some of them and to talk about him and remember him, so that was good. So somewhere along the line of all those years, trying to turn it off again, I have to stop and think. I really was not aware of that. And get through how I became the RE director. After David's death, they offered me, they wanted me to go from 15 hours to 30 hours a week. And by the way, 15 hours, we were not at all watching that. I was working 30 hours a week because I loved what I was doing and I was up there a lot with curriculum and everything. That we were not careful about hours and pay. I was being paid a very minimal salary and that wasn't why I was doing it. Started working 30 hours a week just because they needed that work done. And we had Dorothy Ackerman, the office person for years and years, who knew nothing about Unitarianism, wanted to know nothing. She was a firm Catholic, and when people would call the church office and ask questions about the church, Dorothy always referred them to the minister. Well, there was the minister during this brief interim. We had, that was even before we got the interim minister, of whom I won't say on that. But that was when they asked me if I'd move to 30 hours, and one of the things I would do was take those phone calls and help to be the person who was doing that. Then we got the interim minister, Robert Hoagland, who was marvelous. He knew all the languages. He could take a Bible in its original, whatever, original language, and translated in his mind and go into it. He was a marvelous, very learned person, good interim. At that point, the old church office, I had a little small, like a work room right next to it, and that's where my desk was located, and the minister's office was right there, so we could communicate a lot. All right, they started bringing in ministerial candidates, and I wondered, there were a lot of meetings with various committees and various individuals with Bob Reed, but it was as though they were hiding me in my little office, and I found out later they, for whatever reason, they didn't want him to know that the RE department was just being run by a part-time coordinator. So I never have really solved why that was. But anyway, once I got to meet Bob and Jean and the kids, I immediately clicked. He was a perfect partner in terms of collegiality because we knew what the other person's strengths were. We collaborated on them. He would come upstairs and say, I'm going to do a sermon at some other church next Sunday and they want a children's story, what should I do? Or he'd say, these are the hymns we're going to use this week, would you just run through them and we'll see how they work? And gradually we developed some interesting things. We had a family group that met once a month and did at different people's homes, and it grew into the couples club, but it started, the couples club was for adults. We had a separate all-church family group that met and had a potluck meal and some kind of activity where the adults and the kids were interacting and had various ways of mixing it up so that you weren't always with your own kid, you were getting to know the other kids at the church. A lot of things like that. We began doing the children's story once a month. And the kids would come in for that and then go up to their classes. At that point, it was the way I wish it still were. We had a first hour with activities for both for children who wanted to be there, but mostly for adults. They had a going adult forum that drew speakers and people from all over the community. And we needed something to do with children whose parents came to that. We developed the open classroom for the whole middle group of children, and it reached the point after some time where the kids were making the parents get up and go to their adult things so the kids could be there for the education activities. Our open classroom setup was so successful that the UUA asked for a description of it, and I can't remember, one of the curricula has a complete description of the way our open classroom worked and suggestions for how it go on. So Bob Reed and I worked closely and well together for a lot of years. When he left, it was a shock. But as it turned out, David Brown was, although a very different kind of person to work to, he was also excellent, excellent person to have as a colleague. The smoking was a problem. The fact that he smoked...
Who smoked?
David Brown.
Oh, okay.
I smoked... never really came out during candidating. And it was a big stumbling block, and I probably retired a couple years earlier than I otherwise would have.
I think you're talking about Richard Beal.
Richard Beal. Who does that?
Brown.
I mean Richard Beal. I'm sorry.
Right. That's okay. Nah. So we went from Bob Reed to Richard Beal.
Bob Reed? Yeah.
Now there's a fire in the middle.
And yes, and that's what I'm coming to. Bob had announced his resignation that he was taking a marvelous opportunity in New York State. And we were ready to start candidating. We were looking, we had an interim minister. And all of a sudden, in the middle of the night, I get a phone call, the church is on fire. Bitterly, bitterly cold night. And we drove over, I can still picture it, we drove over and we're standing on the steps of the public library, and I watched my office, which was right over the door on York Street, watched that office fall in flames down to whatever the level of the basement it was buried under. Just horrendous. It was really just catastrophic. Hard to put into words how we felt. It was like living in a dream. This cannot be happening. It was amazing how quickly I give Penny Nader, who was the lucky or unlucky enough to be the chair of the board at that point, give her and the board all kinds of credit for getting together, getting things organized, and seeing that we had a place to go. This all happened just a few weeks before Christmas. And, anyway, we were able to meet. It happened on a Friday night, Saturday, and we were able to have a church service over at Catherine Spaulding, is that the university that's right there? Yeah. In their auditorium the very next day, and it was a wonderful opportunity for people to get up and share their grief and share their feelings. And we had children sharing their memories. They were in the midst of preparing for a Christmas program, which was to take place the week after that. We were able to come in and have that program. And everyone just pulled together. And then later we moved into a different Spaulding building down the block during that part of the interim. But the church itself, luckily, the up parts of the old building, were parts usable or did the world be entirely in the... No, the church itself was nothing left, really. In my mind, it was still there. I could still go out and walk up the steps. The only thing left of the old church building was the basement. And we had moved the offices next door. The RE office was basically had been one of the storage closets in what was a rooming house. Not long before the fire, they had completely remodeled, that we had finally been able to buy that house next door. This was fortunate for us that we had the house, because that had taken place not that long before, and they had built, architect designed a gorgeous, gorgeous preschool area at the rear of Haywood House, and that was still miraculously intact, which made it a little easier that those kids could be there. We managed to find enough closets and side rooms, which had been rumors apartments, to put together our space for all the different Sunday school classes. The juniors, or the senior high, were in the basement of the old house, and they loved it. That was their own space.
Anything else about the rebuild from the fire?
About what?
The rebuilding from the fire and moving the ditch while the church was in the west
end? Yeah, then they found that a church could be available in the west end. And this was a big opportunity and a big problem at the same time. And we were able to use a church that interior design, it was very reminiscent of First Unitarian. So that you kind of got a feeling of being at home. If you could draw the huge curtains over the front, which had some very, very, very Christian, biblical, large painting, and we just covered that up. But the Sunday school set up there, we had to just kind of scrounge space in the basement, and it wasn't terribly satisfactory, but we kept it going. And we did lose a number of families who wouldn't dream of driving all the way out. It wasn't the mileage so much as who you are in the heart of the West End. The African-American part of the community, the neighborhood was black. We had some problems. We had drug users and drug salesmen meeting on the sidewalk out in front. We had a few break-ins. But we also were good neighbors and did quite well there, and it kept everything going. We not only retained a number of our faithful families, but we added some people who maybe started coming because we were in the West End. And again, David did a wonderful job of bringing this all together, and as did the board and everyone was heading things up at the time.
So we're back at so the church, what about the new church opening?
Okay.
Or the rebuild.
They had a meeting beforehand to kind of welcome everybody back to the church. They really didn't want the RE people to have any part in that. I was not at that point. This is all about the adult congregation and the big church, so we were held kind of separate from that. But Easter Sunday, the first service, beautiful day, the senior high class who had been in junior high when the church burned had an overnight the night before the church burned. And they were always a little bit afraid that something they had done, did we leave the oven on, was it our fault? And it was not. This happened in the furnace room or something like that. But that class were now seniors, and their tradition was to serve a pancake breakfast on Easter morning. So they had their first overnight in the new church, in the choir room of the new church. And the choir room and RE office in the new church are connected by a tiny hallway with a little bathroom and shower for the use of the choir director, for use of whoever was going to be using that upstairs space. Well, it hadn't been hooked up yet, but they didn't know that. And the minister's son, who was a member of the senior high class, decided he was going to try out the new shower. The result was we got there the morning of the Easter breakfast, and there was a small flood in the hallway. I think this all happened the same day. It was right after. Yes, it has to have been, because it was involving Easter. Anyway, that class, one of the classes that went out with, came in with fire and went out with water or something, made a wonderful story. The day was nice enough that we were able to have the doors open. Some tables could be outside. The surrounding churches sent flowers and marvelous, marvelous welcome. The place was jammed with people. It was the most joyous occasion. We're back. And our symbol, the phoenix, we've risen from the ashes. Couldn't have been a better day or a better time. The old wayside pulpit, which stood through the burning, was able to welcome us back. It was interesting what remained and what was lost. They were able to save certain pieces of art and important plaques and things like that, which had been in a safe that somehow survived. It was aside enough. I'm sure the archives committee knows all about that.
And the big
but that was, those were our memories. And after that, we were able to really have an excellent going Sunday school upstairs. And the fact that the open classroom space was designed specifically for that use. The large room, it could hold the people from the other classes. We could meet in there, and except on the Sunday, the one Sunday when we had the entire family and the children's service to open the celebration of life once a month. We also took them down for an entire service if it was something with really involving an all-family type of experience. Because it was the feeling at that time, we wanted the kids to feel a part of and feel involved, but that did not necessarily mean sitting in the pews, wiggling around and learning that this is how church is. And there, this is a philosophical difference, and I haven't changed my mind about it at all.
So this was during Richard. How did Richard work with you to create those family events, worship?
We'd talk about the theme. Often he would present the story, because he was such a marvelous actor. He was a dramatic person. Sometimes I would do the story. And it all just flowed. It was not something that, not a burden. It was just, this works, it works well. We'll have them for the extra time, but we won't have them if we don't think it's necessarily pertinent for children. And that's apparently that today the trend is entirely different, that parents want to have their children with them, and that's fine, and it's working, and I don't have to do it, so it's all right.
All right. Let's see. All right.
Yes, the fact that our church was active and known for the as a place. Also, in relation to Vietnam, the conscientious objector, that whole part of conflict, I was aware of it. I was not part of it. I was not part of any of these that were being done by the minister and probably by people in the congregation. But I was strictly involved in RE, and at that point, religious education through all those years was from birth through senior high. And I think there was a young adult group, but it met as part of the continuing education part of it. The adult forum and anything that happened on Sunday morning involving anything above school age was separate from me. So it was a different world. We weren't recruiting for, we weren't planning for participating. Of course, we also weren't being paid for the extra hours of time that takes. So I may have been working them, but it was not a part of the setup. So the Vietnam Council was very important. We had a lot of press. We had good coverage from the paper newspapers at that time. Of course, Carol Sutton Whaley, the first women's editor of a major American paper, was a strong member of our church. and her daughter and my daughter were in the same Sunday school class and so on. So I was, it was interrelationship that way. The big real struggle that my husband and I had, and it was a very difficult time, was the issue of sanctuary. Because the resolution that they wanted to pass would have been in direct conflict with the New Albany school system, and it was almost impossible for us to consider being able to back something that would be, could cause Deacon to lose his job, could cause things like that. We felt very much in favor of the idea of sanctuary, but not of publishing a statement, adopting a statement. And there were people who were very unforgiving of that attitude.
So that was in Bob Reed's time about sanctuary.
Was it?
Yeah.
Okay. Yes, yes it was, because we did counsel with
right.
it. Bob counseled us about it. You know, we had to work through that, but we all managed to come through it.
So what about welcoming congregation in the church in Richard Beale's time to be more welcoming?
I don't remember. Well, wasn't that gay, lesbian,
yes.
racial?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had always been.
Right.
Absolutely. But that was something we just took it for granted. We did. We had people, I'm sure we had a couple of Sunday school teachers or assistants, but it wasn't the last don't tell. It just didn't matter. These are human beings. Just as it didn't matter, the race didn't matter. We didn't have very many African American members, we had a few. And they were just part of the congregation, you know. So I felt very strongly about the welcoming congregation. The thing that I still, I don't have problems in terms of its existing, I have problems with the way it's handled, was the whole polyamory issue, which lost some very major long-time members and their support. Possibly not because of what it was, but because of the way it was handled.
Agreed. Yes.
And I don't to this day know what the total feeling is, but I think everybody is doing is just sort of, it's okay, it's part of the church. I'm just not sure.
All right.
I don't.
Anything else about the church you'd like to share? The last decade or so?
The religious education component was always most important to me. Working with kids, working with families, and the other activities. I said that I can't separate my role in the church from its being my having been my family, my home away from home. I am not a fan of the kinds of services we have now. And so physically, it's harder for me to get there. My faculties have all declined, so I don't hear as well, although that can be overcome by sitting in the right place. But it's a totally different kind of service. I don't particularly need or enjoy it. But at the same time, I still feel very, very close to the whole church and the whole idea of it. So, I'm there in spirit. I've always loved the music component. Not necessarily all the little different kinds of jazzy things that we're throwing in, but that's all right. It's a way, again, if you're going to have the whole family there, you're going to have to do something to see that the kids are able to get up and down and focus on things, and we can sing along and do this and that. Not everything works, but we are ready to try, and I think this is important. You have to test things and learn what works and build on that. The new technology is a help. It's great to have the hymns and everything posted where everybody can see them and sing along. And there are other ways in which the new technology is good, maybe not so good. I still can't see myself, even though I may not go on Sunday morning, I have no desire to sit here in my home and look at what's happening on the screen.
Well, the webcast?
Yeah. And I'm not even sure I could pick that up anyway, but that would be. I like the idea of the Sunday luncheons. I'm not sure what is happening, how successful changing to a 10 o'clock hour of all church Sunday, whatever they call it, religious exploration, or goes by any other name. It's still RE to me. I'm not sure how successful that has been in terms of getting more people. If you look closely, you see that it's basically people who would have to be there for something else or who have always been there for the one class or have been in the kitchen or social hall discussing current events and other things. So we probably don't draw any more people for that than we would have the old way. And in terms of the religious education's idea of it's making it easier to recruit teachers, that hasn't necessarily proven right. And we ask the same old. But we're going on. I'm encouraged there seem to be more children around. I like it that there are opportunities to get together. I wish they would go back to the Wednesday night gatherings. That was successful in its time. We were drawing a mix of people with different interests, again, getting in some feeling of being part of the all-church family in the middle of the week. I think one committee or another still meets that way, I don't know.
You're talking about Chalice Night.
Chalice Night, yeah.
Uh-huh.
Other churches were doing it, we tried it, it worked for us. I think that probably ended when, more or less when Richard left, because he...
Well, we had a few of those going on still. I mean, since Richard's
last was
2000, since 2001, so we were, Tiffany and I were cooking when.
Yeah, that's right. You kept cooking. So that was a served dinner?
Yeah.
I don't know.
It was a served dinner for most.
So that would get a lot of people there.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
There you go. Otter Creek.
Otter Creek. The Otter Creek campouts were a wonderful opportunity for church families to get together at the end of the year. That was before we had all year church. You know, most congregations all over the country broke for the summer, and we would, the first or second week in June, would all be out at Otter Creek for the weekend. And those are wonderful memories for a lot of us. I'm sorry, I don't think this year, it needs somebody to take hold of it and make sure you get your reservation in immediately after the first of the year, or immediately when they open up. And that didn't happen. I hope they'll go back to it. The church auctions have been another really good way for people to meet and mingle and get to know each other. Those have been highly successful, and I think that has fallen by the way this year. But I'm hoping to get back to it. Okay. Now, what's this? Our presence in the community, standing on the side of love. We are visible. This is not just since the Black Lives Matter banner went up. Because the marriage banner before that was, to me, how can I say this, much more important than any one specific Lives Matter. I think Black Lives Matter. I think there are many, many sides on this divisive issue. I'm not thinking about that. I'm thinking about the right of marriage, the marriage rights issue. I'm so proud of our stand. I'm proud that we continue to conduct marriages. I'm proud of our monthly vigils out in front. And I love the way that sometimes people will come and join those vigils, or they will honk their horns, or maybe they wave their fists. I don't know what they do. But that's been important to us. There have been years when our leadership has been on local committees about Weston, I think, was very involved in that. And we have had individual members who have been noticed for their act, either for their civic or political stance, or their cultural stance. We have Sina Nazem, who's very, very involved in the Spalding Writers Program, and she has enriched us in many ways. We have
Anne-Marie
Cobbs.
RCRC. Religious,
yes.
Coalition.
The
yes.
Coalition for Abortion Rights, whatever the name of it is now. Many of us, including me, have done our stints out at the fairgrounds during that and taken the opportunity to be in that booth. And again, more recognition, more agreement from those who are on that side, and more chance to discuss the ramifications with the people who might be open to discuss them. There have been times when we've had two people picketing their sidewalk outside for one issue or another, but somehow when one thing that seemed impossible, such as integration, racial integration, such as gay marriage, the various things that seemed would never happen, somehow come around and happen. I think we're at a crucial time right now, and I hope we can continue to be a strong voice. It was wonderful to have our National General Assembly, our International General Assembly, meet in Louisville several years ago for the first time, to have our minister at the forefront of that, to have a wonderful public meeting down beside the river. And again, here we have...